How has there never been a documentary on John Coltrane?
That's an interesting question, yeah.
Yeah.
There have been several biographies, of course. There's four or five biographies of Coltrane. No one's ever done a movie, though, and I'm not sure if it's because they didn't want to do a dramatization like the Miles Davis movie that came out recently or something like that, and this is really more of a documentary. So I don't know. That's a good question.
Have you seen the film?
No, I haven't. I've been trying to get a screener copy so I can see it, so I can plan the program around what's in it. But the interesting thing that I've read about the reviews is that it's more of a commercial movie for people who don't know jazz than a movie for jazz aficionados, which is going to be good in this case.
What is someone who is maybe not a musician, not a jazz aficionado even, what can they get out of this film?
Yeah, they're going to get a lot out of this film because a lot of people talk about Train. He had almost a mystic quality to him, especially toward the end and after he found religion and recorded A Love Supreme. And he was very involved in the civil rights movement in the 60s. He died in 67, but in 65 and 6, he became a sort of a centerpiece for musicians in the civil rights movement. And at that time, his music was pretty crazy. It was getting pretty out there. So he had a very short recording career, really, from 54 to 67. But his music changed several times during that period. And he was always on sort of the cutting edge of jazz during that period. Of course, when he first came out, people hated him and they thought he was terrible and he played too many notes and he had a terrible sound. And there's all these, you know, early reviews of his music.
Well, there's even the story of when he was in the Navy. He played in the Navy band, and people say if you would have heard him back then, no one would have gone, boy, there's something there, right?
Yeah, I think he played alto in the Navy band.
So where does that come from, Glenn? How do you go from someone no one would say, this guy's going to be something, or I can hear something, to what John Coltrane became?
Well, he was in that seminal Miles Davis quintet with Paul Chambers and Philly Joe Jones and Red Garland, and they recorded a bunch of records in 55 and 56. Then Miles fired him apparently for drug abuse, didn't like his habits. But in 57, he got a six-month gig with Thelonious Monk at the Five Spot. Can you imagine today a six-month gig at one club? You're lucky if you get six nights in.
No kidding.
Yeah. Anyway, that was really, I think, seminal in his development because Monk's music was very skeletal and he didn't comp a lot and he just kind of left things open. And that's when Train really started exploring the sheets of sound type of thing that that led to Giant Steps and some of his 1959 recordings that were, you know, seminal in his career.
Glenn Wilson is who we're talking to. This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. The movie is Chasing Train. It's playing at the Normal Theater on September 9th. And is this your nonprofit, Further
yes.
Jazz Inc.?
Yes, Further Jazz Inc. is my nonprofit. We produced last year the Thomas Chapin concert at
right.
the Normal Theater, and I thought we had such fun with that that maybe we could do something like that again. So I received another grant from the Town of Normal, Harmon Arts Grant, which I'm very grateful for. And that's going to pay for the musicians for four concerts. We're going to do September, October, November, December. And hopefully the Normal Theater would like to keep this going after that.
Are they four separate films or just new showings?
Four separate films,
okay,
yep.
All right.
In October, we're going to do They Called Him Morgan, which is about Lee Morgan.
Lee Morgan, oh, cool.
I'm going to play some Lee Morgan music. And in November, it's not set in stone yet, but I have the U of I Latin Jazz Ensemble booked. And we're going to maybe do the, what was that Cuban movie, the Buena Vista Social Club,
oh,
Volume
yeah.
2 came out.
Okay,
or some other Latin movie. There's a bunch of great movies about Latin musicians, but I really wanted to bring the U of I Latin Jazz Ensemble here because we have nothing like that in this town, and they're an amazing group of students that play their authentic music and led by Tito Carrillo, the trumpet player.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I want to ask you an alternative to a question I asked you before about what can non-jazz aficionados get out of this movie. You play saxophone. When you first heard Coltrane, how did it hit you? Because so many people say, you know, it changed their lives.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. I think what changed their lives for non-saxophone players is different than for saxophone players.
Yeah.
And what changed for saxophone players...
Did it change your life?
Yeah, I mean, his playing, he plays more notes than anybody. he also changed the way jazz was played in that, of course, in the early days, you could only fit 3.5 minutes on a disc, so the solos had to be short. Later on, when albums came out, you would have 4 tunes on a side, maybe, of a 20-minute record. Well, Coltrane used to play one song for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just an incessant practicer. He practiced, the legend has it that on a breaks he was practicing, and when he was in the hotel he was practicing, and he was always trying to work out stuff on the saxophone. So he was just an incessant practicer, and he spoiled a lot of saxophonists, I think. He sort of ruined it because everyone's wants to be trained and nobody is, and so a lot of people play too long and a lot of people play too many notes because they think they're being trained, you know, and a lot of jazz historians look to his music and say that's kind of where we lost it in as far as jazz, when he started playing some of his avant-garde stuff in the 60s, late 65, 66.
People started following him into
people
that, those
started,
corners?
A lot of people started following into that avant-garde type of playing, and, you know, I was listening to Interstellar Space the other day, which is just him and Rashid Ali on the drums, you know. Well, it's a whole record of that. So I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking, there is no one else I would ever listen to play this with just saxophone and drums other than Coltrane. And the only reason it holds my interest is because I'm a saxophonist, and I hear all he's doing, and I hear, okay, you know, he used to say, I have to practice 5 hours to get to something I don't know. So it took him the first 5 hours to play everything he knew, and then after that he could get to something new. So that's why he had to practice so long. But he was an incessant studier of the music, a very serious man. Most jazz musicians have a sense of humor in their playing. You can hear it. And Coltrane really did not have a sense of humor. He was very serious, very forthright, very upfront about what he was doing.
Was that his upbringing, do you think?
It could have been.
He grew up in the Jim Crow South and, you know, had to deal with a lot of different things.
Yeah, and I think, wasn't his father a preacher or left his family early
something?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know. That's just his personality. When you listen to him talk, I have on my website like 7 interviews with Coltrane that I've managed to call over the years, and you listen to him talk, and he just sounds like he's very serious about his music. And, you know, people called him an angry tenor and angry sax player, and, you know, he didn't feel angry at all. You know, he wasn't trying to express anger through his instrument, but people heard that. Yeah, it was intense, yeah.
Huh.
And they heard it as anger.
And Denzel Washington voices the words
of
Coltrane in this film, too. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Saxophonist Glenn Wilson, who's bringing Chasing Train, the documentary, the very first documentary on John Coltrane, at least visual documentary on John Coltrane, coming to the Normal Theater September 9th. You brought in Thomas Chapin. You referenced that earlier, the Thomas Chapin movie. Thomas passed away way before his time, as did Coltrane. And I don't think I asked you at the time. I think I asked the movie producer at the time, if Chapin had lived longer, where would his music be today? Let me ask you similar about Coltrane. Where do you think he would have taken music?
I really don't know, because he took it as about as far out as he could in the short career that he had.
Would he have come back maybe a little bit?
I really don't think he would have. He's not the kind of person that would do what Miles Davis did, you know, when he came back with that at the end, the last 6 years of his life, playing pop tunes and things like that. I think what he might have done is maybe expanded into symphonic music or some other kind of music that allowed him to explore more sounds and sonic qualities other than just a quartet setting. He probably would have done a lot more writing and composing. Most of his writing and composing was for a small group or for, you know, quartet and stuff like that. So probably he would have gone into compositional aspects of jazz, but I can't imagine playing wise. It's almost like a perfect arc, you know, his career, and it ended when it had to end almost. So I really don't know how to answer that. I don't know what he would have done.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting to see.